Jason Flores is going to join Justice and Drew here in just a few minutes. America's for Prosperity. So we turned around a moment ago and they were showing the Westminster Dog Show over the weekend. My experience with the Westminster Dog Show was reserved only to Best in Show, the Christopher Guest, which is fantastic. What was on? Oh, the race was on, the exhibition, the Clash was on, the NASCAR race on Sunday. It was over. And then it switched immediately over to the Westminster Dog Show. And the guy hosting it was like really, really good at his job. So, you know, he shows up, welcome to the Westminster Dog Show, and they have the whole course laid out, right? Where they have to run this course. And so he runs the course and he describes everything and what the dogs have to do and the dangers and what they're worried about, what they can and can't do, where they might fall. And the guy was so, like, he was so into it.
Yeah.
And so compelling. Yeah. I'm like, dude, I want to watch this.
Yeah.
So I wiped out, like, watching the Westminster Dog Show. And
it's not bad TV.
I was on edge.
I've watched it before. There's a reason why they air it every year. It's kind of a big deal.
It's fun.
It's pretty interesting TV.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is he gonna make it down the hill? He made it down the hill.
I haven't watched it this year at all, but I've watched it before.
Oh, they swung too far off the course. Oh, no, he didn't jump high enough. Oh, he knocked down a pillar. Oh, no.
The tension is very real.
It's palpable. It was absolutely palpable.
You can feel it.
you can. Before Jason's going to be joining us in the studio here in a second, quick story. If you go to my Twitter feed, you can see the picture of this. And I don't know, Drew, this made me laugh because I thought of you because, well, let me explain why I thought of you. So out of Care 11, a man's plan to take his girlfriend to hear the Red Hot Chili Peppers ended with the blare of bagpipes and men in kilts instead.
Yeah.
Duncan Robb thought he had found a terrific ticket price for the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert in Belfast, Ireland. Okay. He purchased the tickets, and when he got the hard copies of them, his girlfriend realized that her significant other had made a huge mistake and a pretty hilarious one. She informed Rob via text that the tickets that he thought were for the Red Hot Chili Peppers were actually for the Red Hot Chili Pipers. And the reason I thought of you is because the Red Hot Chili Pipers, a bagpipe cover band of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, is the kind of gig that you would go to.
No.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Bagpipes aren't really my thing. They're pretty cool, like on a foggy morning, playing that one song that every bagpipe can play.
Right.
Just that one.
I won't do it. We all have it in our head.
Yeah. Everybody knows that bagpipe song.
Right.
But that's kind of cool, but I think I would have a tough time sitting through a whole bagpipe concert.
Well, don't knock it till you try it.
I'd be willing to give it a try. I feel like there's a cap on my bagpipe consumption that would end before the concert did.
They tout themselves as the most famous bagpipe band on the planet.
You know, I bet there's a YouTube video.
And several of our listeners actually tweeted with because there was a photo of a screen grab of the text message and the pictures of the tickets themselves. Several of our listeners tweeted, they're like, yeah, man, they're great. I saw them in, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, yeah, so.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up I'm going to find a video. We'll play a little Red Hot Chili Pipers here a little bit later on in the show. I don't know. I mean, I love bluegrass cover bands. I think that's a really
fun. That's a fun genre that I'm into is
bluegrass tribute albums and things like that.
Yeah.
The bluegrass tribute to Metallica are fantastic. Guns N' Roses is really good. Bagpipes, though, so bit of a different animal.
Jason Flores, America's for Prosperity. If you've got a choice, are you going Chili Peppers or are you going Chili Pipers?
I'm gonna go Chili Pipers, actually.
Okay,
just to try it out, right? I mean,
sure.
My wife is Scotch Irish, so maybe she's rubbed off on me a little bit, and I have to say that now. I don't know, but I think it could be fun.
You seem more like, and I have no basis for this at all, but you seem more akin to being, you're either a metalhead or you're a country music fan.
I think I'm a little of both.
Okay.
I grew up with classic rock, so
okay.
My dad was like old school classic rock, right? His favorite band was Lynyrd Skynyrd, I think, or go even a little deeper into some of that southern rock. And then, you know, I lived through and survived the 80s as a young child, so I heard all the music,
right.
But I wasn't old enough to go and have any fun with it.
Okay.
Right. And recently, I've been a lot more into country.
Okay.
So growing up on the dairy farm, I guess, maybe, is that stereotypical? I don't know. I think it's more of a rebellion against, I've got nothing left in my life after growing up on the dairy farm. I'm literally in the heart of St. Paul. So I have to at least listen to some country music.
It's the only way you can reach
back. So I'm not entirely like inner city, right? So other people look at me like, oh, how do you, it's so cute when you go out, you know, outstate, you learn things about the farm. And have you ever been on the farm before? Yeah. I spent a lot of time working really hard and studying so that I didn't have to stack hay the rest of my life. Even though there's days, trust me, there are days I want to go back and do it.
Yeah, I'm sure stacking hay a lot of times
there's a sense of accomplishment to it. You know, you get done with the rack, or you know, you get the barn filled up, or you know, there's good things about it all.
It's a job you can finish.
Exactly.
Whereas what you're doing right now,
fighting against government overreach in Minnesota,
is a job that will never
end.
Thanks for that, guys. Thanks. I was hoping
now he's going back.
Maybe there's some light somewhere. Yeah. Call my mom. I'm coming home for breakfast.
The only exposure that I get nowadays to country music is, one, if I happen to be with my dad and I'm in the car with him, which doesn't happen very often because he lives in California. But two, when I go out into the lobby and they go through the rotation of our radio stations and I hear like the country songs, like 30-second snippets of them, they're all so weird now. The stories they tell are also strange when I listen to that country music, the modern country music.
The best thing I've seen about, you know, modern country music, I mean, number one, they're all about the same thing. They're either about drinking or they're about cute girls.
Right.
Okay, and usually you combine them and you throw a pickup truck in and you're good to go. But while you're searching YouTube this morning, there's a couple guys that have gone through and done like a mashup of country songs. So they'll take like the chords and line from one,
yes,
and the chords and the lyrics from another one, and they'll just kind of pick and choose, and they'll synchronize it the right way. You can make a whole new country song that is a top hit out of just lines from other country songs.
Country music has, you know, pop country music has become very, very formulaic. And yeah, I've seen the video where they mashed up like six current country hits
and made a new hit.
And they just kind of blended them all together, and you can't tell the difference.
Yeah,
they all sound like the same song.
Well, Aerosmith went that way when they kind of went more mainstream. When you could do all their songs were all, you know,
big power ballads.
Yeah, they were all just interchangeable.
Oh
yeah,
hate power ballads.
I'd love me some power ballads.
there's a time and a place, my friend. A time and a place.
All right, Americans for Prosperity, Jason Flores. Hey, thanks for coming in, man. How are we doing this morning? How was your event?
Very good. The event was awesome. We had almost 100 people and packed our room over close to the Capitol. We had last night a kickoff of our Roadmap to Prosperity. It's our kind of 5-point big picture agenda for what will help get Minnesota back on track. Last night we invited both the Speaker of the House, Kurt Dowd, and Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka to join us and about 100 of our activists from around the metro, and it was a great event. We talked a little about the agenda. I moderated the discussion between those two. Gave him a little bit of grief on a few topics that I think are going to be familiar to our listeners here on this show.
Sure.
And really had a lot of fun with it.
Biggest takeaway?
Biggest takeaway is there's going to be a lot of action at the Capitol this year. There's going to be a lot of spinning. There's going to be, I think, a lot of bills passed. I think there's going to be a lot of bills vetoed. And we're going to see what happens at the end of it, when the dust settles, what actually passed or what moved forward this year for the state of Minnesota. Because, you know, as your listeners know, election year, Dayton's last term, you know, a few of the legislators now who were running for governor aren't. So I think that makes it a little bit easier than it could have been if you had a couple legislators that were really in the mix for governor as well. But it's going to be nothing has to get done. And the speaker said that last night. He said, we don't have to pass a lot of bills. A supplemental budget, we already passed a budget for the year. And we're going to be likely a little bit in surplus, so we don't have to address a deficit. Now, the only thing that I'd argue probably does have to get done in some way is tax conformity issues with the federal government. And we talked about that last night as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what your the Americans for Prosperity priorities are, but when I look at the upcoming session, there are two things that I think are going to get done and need to get done pretty quickly. One is obviously passing their budget.
Yeah, I mean, the governor does have to allow the legislature to be funded. That would be a big problem right out of the gate.
They have to pass the appropriations to actually fund the legislature, so that's probably going to get done day one, signed, no big deal. And then the federal tax conformity. Beyond that, I'm really hoping that this is a bit of a do-nothing session. I was watching the media roundtable yesterday. Dayton, Bach, Doubt, I'm drawing Gazelka.
Portman?
And
Representative Portman.
Yes, sorry, I was drawing a blank there. All being, you know, grilled by the media, questioned by the media. the one thing that concerned me is they all appeared to be in lockstep agreement on the fact that this is a great year to do another bonding bill.
Right.
And Dayton was throwing out $1.5 billion.
And we heard from both leaders last night on that, and I specifically asked them. They said no way is he getting $1.5 billion.
Good.
That if they were softer on that with the broad media yesterday, I don't know. It's kind of nice to have these guys in.
And
I think the speaker mentioned it last night. It's a little more fun to talk to a group of activists who you know are going to stand up on an agenda like ours and do something about it, right? So you want to give them a little more of the unvarnished, non-politically correct spin. So they were both pretty unequivocal. It was not going to be 1.5. In fact, they both said it was going to be under a billion, like no question. Then I pushed a little more and said, well, maybe $5. And
yeah,
they thought maybe a touch above $5 would be appropriate. But look, we've got, in a state where we supposedly have a balanced budget, we've got $10 billion of debt hanging out there already. We spent almost $1 billion of debt service. And actually, the speaker
does that even include like the pension obligations?
That does not include the pension obligations. Pension obligations are unfunded liabilities, not debt. It's going to happen.
Ugh.
But the speaker made a good point last night on the bonding bill, and he mentioned, and he's going to try to get a report, and I'm interested to see it. You know, every year these projects are all supposed to be shovel ready to go, you know, kind of the immediate needs. We got to do this now. That's why we're borrowing for it rather than saving up for it.
Right.
Right. Or putting it on layaway. And there's a set of projects out there of some dollar amount that have been authorized, but not let. The bonds have not been let. And some of them have been out there for 3 or 4 years. So if you were in the bonding bill 4 years ago with your project and the bonds still haven't been let because the project isn't ready, that, you know what? That project's canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, depending on how much money was in that category, let's unauthorize those projects, free up some of that debt that hasn't been let yet, and at least keep that total amount of debt more stable than it would be otherwise.
Sure.
I think that's a good idea.
I would absolutely be on board with that.
How does... I have the statement here from Americans for Prosperity on the president's infrastructure plan. How much overlapping when we're having the two conversations? We're having a conversation about the bonding bill, but then we also have the national infrastructure plan. And I know the statement here says, as with every proposal that spends billions of taxpayer dollars, the devil's in the details, as we just saw last week with the so-called bipartisan budget agreement.
Right.
I'm just wondering how much are we looking at them separate? How much are we looking at them together?
I mean, that federal plan, for all the hype about it being $1.5 trillion, there's only about $200 billion of actual federal money in there. They're trying to do a lot of leveraging this. That's the world we've come to. I can use a sentence that says only $200 billion. Talking to my wife about the credit card. Well, there's only...
to that real quick, and I don't mean to cut you off, Jason, but to that real quick, I want to take a moment and go and mention how big of a problem that is. I'm not saying with you, but just in general about how we look at these dollars and how we don't have any, when we talk about government spending at the state level or the federal level, we get into these numbers and they like lose all power and meaning.
Right.
We don't assign to them. And I'll always use the Survivor example. When Survivor started, it was the $1 million prize.
Right, it was a huge deal.
And everyone was like, is Vinny going to get $1 million? Oh my gosh. And now, it's they didn't even mention what the... I don't even know if they win money anymore.
They're just looking for the book contract or the new spin-off reality show contract that comes with it, you know?
Yeah, so you talk about this $1 trillion infrastructure plan, you go, well, it's only going to be $200 billion. Billions of dollars.
I completely agree, and I hope that everybody catches me and everyone else every time that you say only a couple hundred billion. Because, I mean, once you spend a couple hundred billion, you're starting to talk about real money here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway,
billion, whatever.
The bigger issue with that infrastructure tax is that you have a big chunk of it that isn't funded with hard dollars on the table. It's leveraging this. It's a partnership here. It's they've got some ideas to leverage the growth in private property and then take a bigger cut of the increased property value because of, and we've heard that argument with light rail, you know, here in the Twin Cities for a long, long time, that we could fund something that way. Well, that's really hard to do when you have to pay people up front to work. Nobody's going to show up to build this infrastructure if they're not getting paid for it or if they're
based on future returns.
Right. So then that means that you're going to borrow more. Well, there's no way that the federal government could be, I will never advocate that they should be borrowing more. We need a plan to balance that budget and reduce that deficit and not otherwise. And from a state level, for core infrastructure projects related to transportation, I'm okay with some level of borrowing. That's not what the bonding bill has been in the past. That's not what all of that $10 billion of debt is. There's some bad debt that's a part of that. So until we really get a handle on how we're spending that debt and making sure that it is true statewide significant core infrastructure type projects, yeah, we're going to challenge that process both here and at the federal level.
Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity, joins us in studio. If you want to comment on the potential bonding bill, the upcoming session, 651-989-5855. Any questions you have, 651-989-5855, and use that hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
Justice in...
Okay. Yeah, I'd go. This okay. is the Red Hot Chili Pipers. This is an AC/DC song.
Yeah, this is Thunderstruck, but yeah.
I feel like we're at a hockey game right now. Like, I'm ready to go to, like, kid hockey practice right now.
Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew. Brianne, that's bagpipes?
Sure is.
Wow.
I'm on board with that.
Some intense bagpipes.
So all the ones that we've seen, they're just playing really slow.
I guess yes. So.
I thought bagpiping was hard when it was really slow.
Yeah.
I want to see the video of that, because, like, that would be something.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
that's impressive.
What kind of lungs you got to have to pull that off?
More than mine.
Seriously.
That was good. I like that.
I bet they don't smoke.
Red Hot Chili Piper bumper music.
No, that's okay. No, we're good. We're good. Brianne, we're totally good.
Executive decision.
You're doing a fantastic job this morning.
Has been made.
We don't need to do that.
We are here with Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for coming in this
morning. Absolutely. Good morning again, guys.
Always a pleasure. You have released the Roadmap to Prosperity.
That's right.
For a simple guide for lawmakers to help Minnesota help make Minnesota the best place to live, work, and raise a family. And so you had your legislative kickoff event. We're talking about it last segment with Speaker Dowd, Senator Gzelka in attendance, along with several of your activists. Talk us through this roadmap for prosperity. What if Americans for Prosperity gets to decide how this legislative session plays out, what you would do.
Just give me that secret pen and I'll take care of things for you. This roadmap is designed to give a big picture framework on where the legislature needs to go. And it's not going to be any surprise to listeners on this station or people who have followed the work that we've done. We've broken it down into five kind of big picture categories because, look, we're not going to come out the gate on day one and say, House File 13 is the way to go. You have to vote for that. We got like 8 weeks of process left here. So we got a long ways to go. We got five big picture buckets that all the issues that we work on and that our activists are interested in are going to be involved in. And it's talking about restoring fiscal stability, right? We can't have 10% increases in state government year after year after year like we've seen. It's simply not sustainable. We want to get government out of the way to ignite the Minnesota economy. That's talking about regulation. It's talking about the chokehold that the administration has when playing games with regulation and timelines and permits and deciding by political fiat who gets what permit and who can start a business in northern Minnesota, as an example. We talk about investing in our future. And, you know, a lot of people give you, heck, oh, that's Democrat code word for new taxes. No, it's called putting money in the right place where it's actually going to do something.
Right.
And as we look at the future in Minnesota, one of the biggest things holding Minnesota's economy back and holding back prosperity for all of us is a lack of a qualified workforce. And that's a problem on the education level where we have a massive, then worst in the nation, education disparity, right, and an achievement gap. Mm-hmm. And then it happens on the same side of we've got a huge chunk of the population that, because they made a mistake early in their life, drop out of the system, never get that education, never get that training, really never even get a second chance. So we talk about that in terms of expanding the American dream and making sure that we need everybody on board in Minnesota and everybody firing on all cylinders to keep our economy working for everyone. Because we're facing some demographic challenges. We're facing some fiscal challenges. We have challenges. And if we don't address these and talk about them and put together a kind of plan like this that gets at the heart of the issue rather than just a political talking point or we're going to spend more money on this or spend more money on that, then we're not going to get anywhere. So if you want more information about this, visit mnroadmap.com. It's all listed out there. As the session goes forward, we're going to add more detail to this as we figure out which bills are moving, what the vehicle is for tax conformity or what the bonding bill is. We're going to put out a lot of information there. But if you sign up at mnroadmap.com, you'll get those updates. You'll get that information. You'll see where we're going with this. And you'll be able to help us hold legislators accountable when they don't do the right thing.
That's mnroadmap.com.
One of the most important ones on this list, and they all are. But the expanding the American dream that you have outlined here, individuals are most likely to thrive when the government respects human dignity.
That's right.
More likely to be able to fully participate in and achieve their American dream when the burdensome licensing practices are minimized, barriers to opportunities are removed. That, to at least for me, and I'm a touchy-feely kind of guy, but that to me is like one of the most important ones, because I really wish that. That the GOP conservatives would do a better job of countering what progressives and the left does. And it's like, hey, look, we all want to achieve. Government is not the answer. You are the answer. Allow us to get out of your way so that you can reach your full potential. And
that's right.
I know a lot of times it just seems as if those that are in positions to go and spread that don't do a very good job. The left's done it for so long and just owned that, the more touchy-feely aspect of it. I wish that we could, and maybe this is a start, we could do a better job of reaching out to people that way. Say, hey, look, we all have dreams too, but there's a better route to go. It's not having the government support your mediocre lifestyle.
That's right. That's why we have this section in there. And I alluded to it in terms of getting everybody on board. But look, the American dream in this country is not the same as it once was. And we talked about this at the event last night, where we have a huge chunk of the population that, because of government programs that have continued to just do more and do more and do more, look, it flat out takes away a little bit of your own dignity, right? There's a part of the population out there that's never experienced the joy of accomplishment and the joy of success in work and the joy of vocation, because we've taken that away from them, whether through stifling overregulation, the licensing requirements that says, hey, if you want to start a business, you got to do 14 hours of this training first and it's going to cost you $10,000. Well, can't we figure out a way to bring somebody on and get them in without those onerous regulations?
Right.
Or without simple things like, how hard is it to get to work and become a successful individual if the one mistake that you make means that you don't have your driver's license anymore?
Hmm.
Right? And it impacts, to a big extent, low-income folks who absolutely need every advantage they can get, but that doesn't come in the way of, oh, poor you, you have these challenges, we're going to solve it for you. We want to be the side that talks about, look, you've had some challenges. Here's the pathway to overcome them.
Yep.
Here's how you can take steps to get the training or education you need, how you can move past whatever that challenge is, and pursue your American dream.
You had this event last night. You went through this roadmap with Speaker Dowd and Senator Gazelka. Two questions. How receptive did you feel like they were towards your agenda, towards your roadmap? And with Governor Dayton still in office, how much of this is actually feasible to pass and pass? Because they're going to have to partner some of these items with things that you might not find so palatable if they want to get Governor Dayton on board with them.
Right.
So how feasible is it that major implementation of this roadmap could get enacted with Governor Dayton in office?
First, I think that both the Speaker and the Majority Leader were very receptive to this. I mean, like I said, this is a core conservative ideal type of a roadmap.
It's pretty common sense stuff.
It's common sense stuff. And you know, they were careful last night, as legislative leaders should be, to, you know, talk about the devil in the details, because there always is.
Tamp right? down expectations a little bit.
Yep. And just make sure that you know about, that our audience knew about the process and how this would come out in the long run, right? We're not holding them to us. There's no specific numbers on here. There's no have to hold this to that percent or here. It's the big picture ideas. Let's have this conversation. And if we have more legislators moving in the direction of this agenda and willing to kind of hold these up as the principles that they're starting from, then those numbers are going to fall into place. The first question I actually asked them last night was, with the governor in his last term, with this as an election year, what's going to get done? And that's where we kind of took a step back and said, well, maybe not a lot. Right. What if you had to say at the end of the session, this bill is going to pass, what's it going to be? So now, number one, I think that especially on these issues that we just talked about, in expanding the American dream, talking about maybe some criminal justice reform and changes to how that, there is bipartisan support for a lot of that. And I would hope that, again, approaching this from the moral imperative of helping fellow citizens achieve their American dream, we can get some stuff done there. I think the tax conformity conversation, something will get done. And I think, unfortunately, that's probably going to get tied to some spending in the bonding bill. It's where, yes, we can make sure that any kind of tax conformity is kind of net revenue neutral to make sure that we protect the benefits of what we've done federally and at the state last year in terms of tax relief. That may have some kind of long-term bonding dollars in there. Now, I hope that as we have all these conversations, we can have some. I would rather, if we have to spend some money now, because we're still dealing with the governor as a third chunk in this this negotiation, I would hope that we take the time to put in some long-term structural changes that rein in and put a stronger grip in the future, even if it means another bonding project now.
Yeah, the governor's going to want a win out of this session. Being
he wants to protect his legacy and go out on that strong note, right?
And I think you're right. I would expect that the governor will leverage more bonding than we want against, you know, the major agenda items that the Republicans want to pass. That would be my prediction. We're going to end up with a pretty significant bonding bill because that's the only way we're going to get things like the tax conformity and other items that you mentioned.
Sure.
MNroadmap.com. Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for the time, as always.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me in.
Always a pleasure.
Coming up, Minneapolis Chief Resilience Officer steps down.
Not Mayor, so resilient, huh?
Mayor's office hopes to fill the grant funded position by the end of March.
No!
Even though we're not 100% sure what it is they actually do.
Justice.
It's like, we've reached a point now, and maybe this is a really, really bad example, but we've reached a point now where any, you know, someone who is known well, right? You know, is a prominent public figure in whatever venue of which they reside, they end up having some kind of success, and it immediately must be taken down. So Shaun White, you know, the snowboarder, okay? And he's transcended. Shaun White has from snowboarding. I mean, he's been in movies.
Mainstream personality.
Yeah, his hair. You just see the red hair. And you say, oh, Shaun White. Yeah, he's the snowboarder guy. And he does all that stuff, right? So he won his record third gold medal. And I believe it's his last. I think this is his last Olympics. He's getting up there. I actually was surprised to see that he was even still competing. But he won his. He won his third record, you know, gold medal. So first, I was on Twitter, and apparently the hashtag MeToo movement was slamming the reaction to Shaun White winning the gold.
MeToo movement not impressed with reaction to Shaun White's gold medal win.
Right, because he had a band, and apparently one of the, I didn't know he had a band, but whatever. He had a band, and apparently one of the band members alleged a sexual assault and then settled out of court like a year ago. Okay.
He's sending her inappropriate text messages.
Okay, is that what it was? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But they said they settled out of court.
And that has to do with Shaun White. How? It was a band member.
There wasn't Shaun White.
It was a female.
It was a female band member.
That he was sending inappropriate texts.
Shaun White was?
Shaun White was, okay, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I misunderstood. No, I thought there was a band member of Shaun White's that was doing these things.
No, it was a member of Shaun White's band that he was doing it to.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
But they settled out of court. So they settled out of court. So the hashtag MeToo move is so upset because people are applauding Shaun White for winning a gold medal.
Right.
Okay, so you have that. Now, apparently, after he won the gold medal, he drug the American flag on the ground, and that got everybody ticked off. I don't think he did it intentionally. He was draping himself in America, and it touched the snow. And so people are... Yeah, that's right. Yeah. White was handed the American flag. He was already holding onto a snowboard at the time, so the flag ended up dragging on the ground behind him. At one point, he appeared to accidentally step on it.
Seriously, people need to get a hobby. People have way too much free time to get outraged by every little thing. First of all, you can think that Shaun White did something inappropriate and disapprove of that inappropriate and still say, but he's a damn good skiboarder.
Yeah.
Those aren't conflicting opinions in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right? He's really good, and congratulations on winning a gold medal. Now, don't do that thing again that you did that was inappropriate.
Snowboarding is not easy either. I've tried. I kind of got the hang of it once. And that was the end of it.
You're not strapping me to
Sean White.
Yeah. Right? I don't even like walking on snow. You're certainly not strapping me on a board and shoving me down a hill.
No, thanks.
Funny side note in the snowboarding. So I was working for an alternative rock station in Southern California. The station was located right at the foothills. If you go into the mountains to where the ski resorts were. So we often did events up, you know, in the wintertime up at the ski resorts. This was when Red Bull first came out. Like it was first introduced. So, you know, I'm young. I didn't bring any water because I'm just dumb thinking in those terms, right? I didn't bring any water with me. So we're out on the slopes and, you know, I'm trying to snowboard and all. So I'm getting really thirsty. The whole Red Bull crew was sponsoring the event, introducing their energy drink. They had put all their cans and just stuck them in the snow to keep them cold. And it's just a free for all.
Right.
So I'm thirsty. So I started pounding Red Bulls.
You regretted that later.
Oh, I regretted that for the next like 3 or 4 days with the lack of sleep.
Super good.
Yeah, it was good for the rave that I went to that night. But it wasn't so good for the lack of sleep in the days that followed afterwards.
I remember the first time when Red Bull was new and I tried the Red Bull and vodka. Not a fan. Not a fan because, you know, after a few vodka cocktails, I'm ready to sleep. But Red Bull's like, nope, you're just going to lay there and be uncomfortable for several hours.
No. It would seem that logic would dictate, okay, well, it just makes me sleepy. This one brings me up. I'll just be nice and this good, even keel for a while. It's not that.
Red Bull wins that battle every single time. A bit of breaking news this morning that we're keeping our eye on. We don't have a lot of information right now, but 3 people have been shot and wounded outside the NSA, the U.S. National Security Agency headquarters in Maryland. One person is in custody. Local fire police departments tweeted earlier they're responding to a possible shooting incident outside of the agency's campus in Fort Meade. So not a lot of information right now. 3 people shot, wounded, 1 person in custody outside of the NSA.
Yeah, we'll stay on top of that. Maybe even reach out to our DC correspondent. He's actually based in Maryland. Andrew Langer is there. So perhaps we'll reach out and see if he has any further details on that. I do. We talked about this the other day, and we'll get to this chief resilience officer. But we do need to start. I wish the media would be the first ones, and I know they won't, to stop taking outrage on Twitter and Facebook at face value. I just stop. Like we said, that outrage has always existed. It just didn't have a platform of which people could anonymously go and display it. And now, unfortunately, you know, the dragging of the flag thing, for example, he didn't do it intentionally. Yeah. It's not like somebody was out there. Sure, we'll give Sean White a hard time for that, but we won't give a hard time to Antifa for burning one.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like, come on.
That's free speech.
All right. Star Tribune. The chief resilience officer of Minneapolis.
Apparently not terribly resilient.
Kate Nuth. Has stepped down after 7 months on the job. So, hired for the grant-funded position in June, Nuth brought a background of sustainability to the position, which was broadly defined as responding to, doing that thing with my fingers, challenges facing the city. She had not delivered any work product before she resigned.
7 months on the job. A job that is broadly defined as just responding to challenges, produced nothing. Why? And got paid. She wasn't there a full year, but the salary was what, $128,000?
$129.5.
$130,000.
That was $130,000.
Call it $130,000 a year. She got paid a lot of money to do nothing. And they're looking to replace her.
Right.
Just can you just eliminate the position? Oh, sure, it's funded through a grant.
It's the Rockefeller Foundation.
Still.
Big surprise.
Mikhail Vitlakovich. We have a KGB agent working.
Vlatkovich.
Sounds like a KGB agent working. He's a spokesperson for Mayor Manchild Jacob Frey. Said they've begun looking for a replacement and hope to hire someone by the end of March who will focus specifically on the mayor's goals. He said the mayor's office did not ask Nuth to step down, but declined to answer whether she was allowed to continue in the position. So what it, and they get into this in further detail in the story, but it looks like she was on more of the sustainability, climate change sort of front, and because Fry's priorities are more affordable housing
right.
and community relations and inclusive economic growth. But this is really, this is like Dwight in the office and the assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, this is not necessary. This is not a necessary position at all, especially not for $130K.
Minneapolis was named one of 100 resilient cities around the world by the Rockefeller Foundation in June, given the award grant of $129,508 per year to pay salary and benefits for someone to fill the job for 2 years. Okay, so that's, you split that salary up over 2 years, so it's not nearly as much.
Nuria Rivera Vandermeide, the city's acting coordinator who oversees the position, says that the exit was arranged under the outgoing city coordinator and that the city, despite 7 months in producing no work product, the city is pleased with her work. What are you pleased with? What did she do? She did nothing. She produced nothing. It says right there, delivered zero work product. What about her work are you pleased with?
Well, she had, in the first 7 months, spent her first 7 months in conversation with people in Minneapolis on the topic of resilience and conducted a survey of 1,900 people.
We do that every morning.
Yeah. I ain't getting paid that.
Yeah.
I'm not getting
every single morning, more than 1,900 people.
Seriously?
A lot more than 1,900.
A lot more.
People.
Yeah. And we're resilient. We're still here.
We're incredibly resilient.
Look, this is nothing more than a title that liberals give to each other because they know that their ideas and policies are unsustainable. So when you have a metropolitan area like Minneapolis, right, that hasn't completely collapsed, they go, you guys are pretty resilient because your ideas suck. So we're going to give you an award. We're going to call it the Resiliency Award.
You can sustain this,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly. You can sustain your horrible ideas, and therefore we will go ahead and give you this money to hire somebody who will continue to push that your ideas are good when they really are horrible and bad, and that's why you're getting the award. That's the only reason why it exists.
Vandermeide said that Knuth was slated to write a report in the first quarter of 2018. So after 7 months on the job, the only thing that the product that she was going to create was she was going to write a report at some point in the first 3 months of 2018. She was slated to write a report, and she both she and Knuth hope that the person in the position can use the existing research. Her ideas about resiliency in Minneapolis after 7 months are still fairly high level. This is a bunch of words. This is perfect for the boy mayor, Jacob Fry.
Right.
Because it's a bunch of words that mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You string them all together, and it sounds like it means something, but it really doesn't. She was settling on the need to strengthen democracy by giving more people the economic security to engage in their communities.
It's a word vomit.
The hell does that mean?
Just word vomit.
What the hell does that mean?
Obviously, housing came up in almost every conversation, as did police, community relations, inclusive economic growth.
Knuth says she will now spend more time with her family and work on her doctoral dissertation, which again is a bunch of word vomit, focused on how groups effectively foster transformation in society to make progress toward sustainability.
Do you think she
don't have your job?
Do you think that she got paid all the money or just the 7 months that she was there? That's the question
I have to assume just the 7 months that she was there.
Yeah,
I hope. Because they're going to hire somebody to replace her, so that grant money was supposed to last 2 years.
The Rockefeller Foundation handing this money out. And people have a problem with the Koch brothers, for crying out loud.
I know, right?
These guys are hiring individuals to do nothing jobs. What do you do? I'm the resilience officer. That looks great on a resume.
I was the chief resilience officer.
Speaking of the man-child mayor. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry has joined 160 other mayors across the country in urging the U.S. Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross to reject the Department of Justice's request to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Fry signed the letter from the U.S. Conference of Mayors arguing that a citizenship question would deter undocumented immigrants from participating in the census, invading people's privacy, and be difficult to implement. That would threaten the Census Bureau's ability to conduct an inclusive enumeration that accurately reflects the diverse fabric of America. Boy, more word vomit. Can I state the obvious thing here? Okay, the individuals that they're trying to protect. Okay, by keeping this citizenship question off the census. One, they know they aren't citizens. That they're not citizens. They're aware of this.
Sure.
And guess what? They're kind of okay with it because they're living that way.
Right.
They're clearly fine with it. At the same time, they also know that census takers aren't ICE agents.
Right.
They're not going to go and say, "Oh, throw them in the wagon."
Yeah.
Lock them up.
Yeah. They just don't. They don't want the data to be out there.
Yep.
Because if the data's not out there, then you can't. It's like with voter ID laws. You can't effectively, you know, argue about voter fraud because you don't have a ton of data out there because they don't track it. They don't keep an eye on it, and they don't keep an eye on it, and they don't track it on purpose.
Right.
If you don't track the number of non-citizens or undocumented people or people that are here illegally, then you can never effectively argue that it's a real problem because all they have to do is say, well, give us the numbers. Show us the numbers, and then we'll agree with you that it's a problem, and then we can talk about ways to fix this problem. If you don't have the data because they don't track it, you lose that argument.
Well, and they get two things out of it. They get one, they get that, absolutely. But then they also get this, because this is what Fry said in a statement. Mayors across the country are on a united front for a fair census that accurately represents our country, ensuring that our immigrant and new American communities, that's a new one, new American communities, can participate in the census without intimidation is the right thing to do and crucial. For a fair representation of diversities like Minneapolis. Boy, he is just good at using words. So twofold. One, they don't have the data. So you're right. It's not out there. And then two, the other part to this is he can go and put up that front about how he is so sensitive to these particular communities. He can put up the style over the substance to say, I'm watching out for you guys. And it appeals to all the activist groups that work around these individuals that take advantage of them. So he, you know, he gets the best of both worlds in doing this.
Yep, it's this is not a nefarious attempt from the Census Department. They're just gathering data. That's all they're doing. They're just gathering information. Eric in Chicago. Good morning.
You know, I figured out what it was. What your chief resilience officer actually did?
Oh,
because you read the job description, and one of those was to promote economic security, right?
Okay.
Didn't everyone just get a 3% tax cut on their paychecks in the last couple of weeks? She must have done that.
I'm sure she's a big fan.
Yeah. Right?
She built that.
You made that.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
One more quick one. This comes out of Channel 5, and we need to do a little bit more digging on this because I think I know what this is exactly in reference to, but according to this article, Minnesota motor vehicle officials believe that they fixed the statewide computer problem that prevented drivers from renewing their licenses. This is all in regards to Minlars, right? Minnesota officials fixed DMV driver's license renewal program. So it's being reported that Minnesota IT services solved the issue on Monday. The Department of Public Safety spokesperson says the issue was related to software connecting the state's legacy computer system to a national database. It's the latest problem in a series of information technology setbacks for the state's license offices. The state introduced the 93 million database called Minlars in July to keep track of the vehicle registrations. The program has had a series of technical issues with delays in processing titles, tab renewals, and transferring vanity license plates. So this isn't a fix to Minlars.
No.
This is a fix to the renewing
right.
of licenses in Minlars.
One little tiny aspect.
Little tiny thing.
They still want another $43 million on top of the $93 million that they've already spent to fix a program that really didn't need to be implemented in the first place because things were kind of working fine before.
I'm sure they're all patting themselves on the back going, hey, we fixed that problem. Now, how many other problems did it create in its fix?
And they did it without additional millions of dollars in appropriations. So maybe they don't need that $43 million.
That's amazing.
Please run my health care, won't you?
Coming up.
No, God, please, no, no.
Out of the Star Tribune, we have editorial. Mike Freeman, Hennepin County attorney, and John Choi, Ramsey County attorney. Tell the Senate to reject dangerous concealed carry reciprocity act.
We'll be joined by a friend of the show, Rob Doerr, next on Justice and Drew.
Justice